You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
That is a movie that I always think about when I think of my childhood Halloween. That's Hocus Pocus, a big Disney hit that they play incessantly in October, still to this day. My daughter loves it. But hey, Jack Ryan's with us now for the next two segments, and Jack has a movie he wants to bring to your attention. We actually have the trailer for it. Here it is.
Yesterday, Dracula was the most fearsome being the screen has ever seen. Today, tonight, you could be Dracula's next victim.
Something new, yet as old as time.
Come on, Johnny.
A date with the devil.
Are you ready? He's ready. He's waiting to freak you out. Right out of this world.
Died September the 18th, 1872. 100 years ago to the day.
You who witnessed it must swear before the name of the devil to keep it secret.
Who knows about vampires, for God's sake? My grandfather died fighting a vampire. The most terrible, the most dangerous vampire of all time.
No!
The year is 1972. A leap year in horror. A vintage year for vampires. The masters of horror to meet again in the 20th century.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is from the movie, the cinematic masterpiece, Dracula AD 1972. As we slip into the Hollywood spirit, Halloween spirit, and have a little fun tonight in our third hour with Jack and then later Courtney from Alabama. So, Jack, why did we play the bulk of that clip tonight? Or the bulk of that trailer, I should say.
It was a great trailer. That's a Christopher Lee Hammer Dracula, one of the last ones. But it's a cool flick. It's sort of a modern Dracula. I mean, many years ago in 72, but the Dracula theme, the Victorian theme of good and evil, it's in the modern world. The young people are playing rock and roll music, and they've got it. But it's still good guys against bad guys. It's not any kind of degenerate. It's a completely white film. Even Dracula in the Bram Stoker, he's some Eastern Romanian, like everybody's white and they have it. It's good against evil, but it's fun. It's a good movie, and I like all the Hammer, Christopher Lee Draculas in 1972. It's a film that doesn't get a lot of attention, but I like it, and you can play it in front of your children. It's not there. It's Halloween and stuff like, but it's good against evil. Good wins, and music is fun. So I like the movie, and I like it very much.
All right. Well, that's just one Hollywood. Why do I keep wanting to say Hollywood? Yes, yes. But Halloween is the word I'm looking for. One Halloween movie you can get into. There are a lot of good Halloween movies. I like the movie Fright Night, a little campy boy who cried wolf vampire movie that was made in the early 80s with Roddy McDowall and Chris Sarandon. And there's some good movies out there, some undiscovered or overlooked gems that have some cult followings.
But yeah.
Now, there is a perfect Halloween book that you have for us tonight that you actually taught public school with. So
sure.
When you were a public school teacher, this was a part of your curriculum in some shape or fashion,
was
it not, Jack?
The place was set where I was teaching. I'm going to introduce it. I'll talk about it in the second 15 minutes. But the book recommendation is H.P. Lovecraft, The Horror of Red Hook. I discovered this author, H.P. Lovecraft, fairly recently. He's a New England horror person And he's very brilliant, but it seems he's a New Englander, and it seems it's like New England white Christian world is like the civilization is there, but underneath it, there are these threats of other things, other worlds and other people. And so this story is set in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where I was a public school teacher after I graduated Vanderbilt University. So I was teaching the very charming ages of seventh and eighth grade. I wasn't teaching underworld occult type deals, but it was sort of some terrifying things, stories that I have. And the Horror from Red Hook, no, it's a very good, it's a short story, but it's a very good Halloween story and very much appropriate to my life and the life of our listeners.
Well, I want to know a little bit more about your time as a public school teacher. How did your students take to you?
Well, I was teaching the very charming ages of seventh and eighth grade, which is a rough deal whenever you get that. And so they had a system that they opened up teaching to liberal arts graduates from good schools and things like that, because it's like in the military, young people have idealism and there, but you have casualties. So these tough kids from, and it wasn't just when they were black and Latino and immigrant. You know, back in World War II days, it was a Navy type place. So they're tough kids. And so they send the teachers in there to try to teach them. And they figure that, you know, we'll lose a couple of teachers and they'll commit suicide or things like that. So that was the most interesting job I've ever had. And it was the best job that I ever had. It toughened me up and made me the person that I am today. And it made me that I will never have to deal with these cowardly conservative sissies. You know, just cowards that can't face up to terror, whether it's the horror of Red Hook or just Rafael Ramirez and some of the rough kids that I had to teach in Brooklyn. So, yeah, no, it was good. And I discovered this book is good. Horror from Red Hook is my story. We're coming up, I think, on a break, but I can tell you a lot more about the my experiences there. And I lived in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn Heights, but I walked over and the kids came, they crossed the bridge from Red Hook. It was like Welcome Back, Cotter, but not nearly as funny.
This is fascinating. I mean, to think one of the TPC's crewmates was a public school teacher. I can remember seventh and eighth grade. I mean, man, that was where it was at. I think my two favorite years ever in school were in seventh and eighth grade. I can remember going to my very private Christian school, which is probably a far sight from a public school in Brooklyn, but you know, maybe a different experience. But I loved seventh and eighth grade. I mean, I still remember so much about those formative years. And anyway, but so I'm sure my experience was a little different than perhaps your students would have had at a public school in New York. But nevertheless, it was a great time to be alive.
Now it's good to be alive, but I mean, they're not cute little kids. But they're also not responsible adults. And you get in there, and when you do that, you just have no time for BSers. And so you have to do what works in traditional society. So this is the basic rule. I'll talk about it in the next 50 minutes.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more. Now, we've got Jack normally is our closer. He normally does the last 30 minutes, but we wanted to talk to Courtney from Alabama, our good friend, de facto mascot, about Halloween and this time of year, because she loves it as much as I do. But she had a family function, and she couldn't come on to the last 30 minutes, so we moved Jack up, put Courtney in the end. We're listening to Jack right now, talking with Jack. Courtney's still to come. Stay tuned.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused border agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Recent studies show that parents who smoke in the home are more likely to have children who smoke.
Yes. In fact, my brother, he's 22 now. He told me and my father that's why he started smoking. One of the reasons why he started smoking is because my dad was around, you know, and they saw my dad smoking. My dad said, okay, I don't want you to smoke. I don't want you to, you know, watch what I'm doing.
Recent studies also show that in homes where parents don't smoke, their children usually don't smoke either.
I am the way I am because my grandparents taught me what not to do. They gave me morals. They gave me belief. They gave me something to believe in. They just taught me well. I love them. I do.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Everybody, welcome back. James Edwards with Jack Ryan. Jack, I'll horse trade with you. I'll watch Dracula 1972 if you go and watch Fright Night from, I believe, 1985. It's Chris Sarandon plays the vampire. He moves into this suburban neighborhood, and the boy next door sees him and sees him doing things that vampires are wont to do, and of course, tells people, and nobody believes him. He hires Roddy McDowell to come, and Roddy McDowell's the vampire killer in it. It's just a great, one of my all-time favorite movies of any
it's
genre.
Fright Night? What is it? Fright Night?
Fright Night. Okay. Fright Night is
all
the
right.
movie.
Well, I'm open to all things good. Obviously, your choice in things are excellent. Your choice in women are good. You've got a beautiful wife and things like that. I'm open to all kinds of things. I don't do so well in the suburbs. I've lived in rural and in rough.
Yeah.
I get lost in the suburbs. Like Chicago's got like 27 suburbs. They're all named after parks and forests and groves, river forest, park forest, forest groves. They don't have numbered streets, and you get out there and they have part blend view or something like, why don't they have view of crack dealers or something like that? That's a place I'm more like comfortable and I know where what's going down. Okay, Fright Night. Yeah.
Well, hey, the good news is though, Jack, you don't have to move to the suburbs to watch Fright Night. That's the thing. And now everything's streaming online now, so you don't even have to go to a video store anymore. But
like,
let's recap very quickly.
Right.
Before we chase that rabbit any further.
Yeah.
So, Jack's movie recommendation of the evening is Dracula 1972. Right. He says it's a flick, a nice mix of Victorian England and mid-England, all white, fits in with our Halloween theme. And his book tonight is H.P. Lovecraft's Horror of Red Hook. Now, this ties in with Jack's personal life because he taught public school students from Red Hook, Brooklyn. So we're going to go back to the discussion of the book and Jack's teaching. I want to know what it was like to be a teacher at a public school in Brooklyn, holding sensible beliefs like you do, having to do what the public school administration would have wanted you to do.
Well, you do. It's because I have an urban environment. I grew up in the South Side of Chicago, and I've dealt with urban kids and coaching, things like that. I haven't. But being a classroom teacher, it's very different from being a coach or being friends with it. And they had two systems that you'd have a homeroom and a class where it's just you and a blackboard against 30 kids if they all show up. And then you have there's a group one where you have two teachers and an assistant and there are tables and you play against. That worked very much better. But just the classroom one where it's one guy against 30 12-year-olds from these rough ones. You're really like being a Christian that they throw into the lions where you're just being like ripped to shreds. And if you can't make it, and these kids, you know, they're tough kids. They've got a belt. They've got a notch on their belt for all the teachers that have quit or gone insane or committed suicide. So you cannot be some soft intellectual person and try to go in there and try to make. You got to be a principal tough person. You have to be disciplined and tough. The kids would threaten you. They don't have guns or, like, you know, knives or anything like that. But you have to be, you know, tough, and you've got to restore discipline. You got to say, like, you're the teacher and they're the students and you're going to do order and things like that, where a lot of things I didn't think I was going to have to do, but you would do it. You call parents. And a lot of times the parents don't have their act together. So it's the grandparents who are from the South, and the grandparents in the South will back up the teacher. And so you talk to the grandparents, and there's some kid that's mouthing off. He's a miniature Muhammad Ali. He's come up. And the next, you talk to the grandparents. They come in the next day after the grandparents from the South have beat the kid's ass. You know, he's built respectful. He's writing. He's raising his hands. So that just sort of taught me all my things that I do about life, about politics. You should be a good person, but you cannot be soft. You can't be some intellectual BSer, whether it's a liberal person or these libertarians. And so that's one of my claims to fame. So I'm one of the biggest person on the alternate that has exposed these idiot libertarian BSers. They've always got some theory why you can't enforce laws against rape, murder, heroin, smuggling, illegal immigration. They've always got some excuses, but they're so smart. But the bottom line is that they're just soft and cowardly people, and they would not last a week at my school in Brooklyn. And I taught at the PS 142. So other schools around the country, it's Thomas Jefferson School or whatever. Our schools in New York City are like German prisoner of war camp, Stalag 142. So I thought it'd be a PS 142. I was like, there, you know, it's kind of strict, you know, that they've got behind. But yeah, and my students were not bad people. Once they saw that you were not a coward, that you were tough, you're a good person, you know, you would earn their trust and you could do things. So I like my students very much. I wanted them to have a good life. And, you know, but that's my recommendation there. This world is not meant for cowardly Christians. If you're some cowardly Christian, you know, don't go teaching seventh grade at PS 142 in Red Hook, Brooklyn.
I wish I could have been in that class. I was talking about my experience at my Lily White private Christian school where the tuition cost more than, you know, that was the joke. I've said this before. That was the joke when everybody graduated. The parents were relieved that they didn't have to pay the tuition anymore because they were going to get a break. Just having to pay college tuition was a big break from the private school tuition. So, but what I wouldn't have given to spend a day in Jack's class.
You know, you would have done fine because you're a good person, you're an intelligent person, but you're also not a cowardly. I'm not supposed to say this word, but it's like a cat, you know. And it's
I think like I know what you're driving at.
Things. Yeah, you're like there, and I have so many people, relatives, uncles, cousins, nephews, brothers, and it's like intellectual, but the main divide is between. You know, these are good people, but the main one is that they're cowardly, you know, folks. And if they would do something like go into boot camp, Marines or something like that, or do what I did, being a public school teacher, have to face terror and, you know, and most public school teachers are not killed. Okay. I'm just using exaggeration, but you're going to have to deal with people that get in your face, that are going to be calling you names, that are threatening you. And so some guy like Mitt Romney, who's never taken public transportation, who's never had a blue-collar job, who's never gotten his hair messed up, who's never gotten to a fist fight. A guy like that is just these kids in Brooklyn can see that. They can horn in and say, you know, this guy is a, and if our people get that reputation that we're all like that, that we're all cowards, that we're all going to give in, that we're never going to defend our people, including when our graves and statues are being desecrated and destroyed, yeah, and all those people are going to do that. But
amen to that.
A good person, yeah, if you get in there and say, no, I'm not backing down, I don't care. There's 30 of you, there's one of me, but I'm tougher than you are. So, you know, that's just life. That's life. And then you do that, you're going to be good. So this is something that I recommend our people do, that after college they, you know, maybe go to Peace Corps, but spend a year or two as a public school teacher. I mean, if you want to be that as a career, to be a public school teacher, most of the public schools are dominated by leftist unions and bad things. So obviously we have a teacher strike in Chicago. That's not good. But for our regular people, yeah, that's something I'd recommend that you do. Get in there and you'll come out of it a much better person, a much stronger person.
Practical words of wisdom from Teacher Jack there. And, man, you know, I love this show tonight. Current events, contemporary topics with Keith and Sam in the first hour. One of the best guest interviews of the year with Simon Roche in the second hour. Folks, if you're tuning in late, go back and listen to that. And then now just celebrating the season with Jack Ryan and Courtney from Alabama. She's next to close us out tonight. Jack, love you. Thank you. Talk to you next week. We'll be right
back.
Thanks.
Give my best to Courtney from Alabama. She's a great gal.
I will.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the ceasefire in Syria has just begun.
There was some activity today. But we also saw some very positive activity, the beginnings of the coordination that will be required. The reason this couldn't happen instantaneously is there was a great deal of coordination that had to take place so that there can, in fact, be a safe withdrawal.
Turkey's president says they will resume fighting unless Kurdish-led fighters withdraw. President Trump says the Kurds are pleased with the ceasefire.
You have the Kurds who we're dealing with and are very happy about the way things are going, I must say.
Former Ohio Governor John Kasich says he now favors the House impeachment inquiry. He says he made up his mind after hearing acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney talk about the president's withholding military aid from Ukraine unless Ukraine's president investigated Joe Biden and his son. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Friends and family, I've told you about the great sleep I get with my MyPillow every night. Well, right now, you can get a great deal and extra safety. Because if you go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special, get their buy one, get one free offer on the MyPillow Premium Pillow. Your 60-day money-back guarantee goes all the way through March 1st, 2020. That's now through December 25th. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special and use my promo code USA.
Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders says he had to turn away supporters at a rally in Queens, New York. He made his return to the campaign trail after suffering a heart attack 2.5 weeks ago. He says his message is about more than just beating President Trump.
It is about transforming this country. It is about creating an economy and a government that works for all of us, not just the 1%.
He picked up endorsements from Congresswomen Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
An enormous amount of the House of Representatives endorse Medicare for All. That's thanks to Bernie.
The Republican National Committee tweeted, "It's no surprise far-left Democrats have endorsed Sanders, saying their agendas align." You're listening to USA Radio News.
One of the things we've been doing on iTonight, folks, is playing some of those fun Halloween songs, and that segment is no different as we welcome back to the show our longtime friend Courtney from Alabama, calling from Alabama tonight. She's back to talk with us about how these fall temperatures we're all enjoying right now and the spirit of Halloween stirs her ancestral memory. Courtney, it's great to have you back tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
So you and I love this time of year. Now, I know you love it as much as I do. You say it's very non-Southern when it comes to our weather preferences. But to that, I would say, you know, we were living in this for thousands of years in Northern Europe. It was only, in fact, I made mention of this with Keith just last week. It was only the last 200 or 300 years that our people came down and settled the South from Northern Europe and Scotland and England and so on and so forth. So historically speaking, we are more in tune with that type of weather. And for 200 years wasn't enough to catch us up on it.
Exactly. And you know, I wonder if most white people, like even in the South, if eventually they grow out of the warm weather phase, because, you know, when I was in my 20s, I was the type that just loved to go to the beach. I loved summer. I liked to get a tan and everything. And I've long grown out of that phase. And I wonder if most Southerners grow out of it at a certain point. But what I don't get is, like, if you look at the demographics of these different Caribbean islands that are even further south of us, it's like even they have like 3% of their population is European that still lives in those areas. And it's not always from, you know, places like Spain and Southern Europe, but people with British ancestry. And it doesn't make much sense to me. I don't know how people, you know, like people of our stock permanently live in places like that. It's fun to vacation to, but I don't get that.
But so now let me ask you this. I complain about the weather all throughout the summer on this show. And then the last couple of weeks, once it finally broke, I think people can even pick up in the tone of my voice how much happier I am. So you're in Alabama. You've got some beaches. You've got some nice beaches down there. You got Orange Beach. You got Gulf Shores. You have to pick, Courtney. Or do you want to go to a beach in the sun? And I do like going to the beach. I'm not, you know, I like that for a vacation. But if you had to pick one climate to live at, would you live on the beach or would you live in a cold, dark European forest?
If I had to pick one or the other, as much as I love being on the coast, I do think our people have a connection to the sea. And I love always, I do always love being near a coastline, but if I really had to pick, and especially now since I've lived so this close to the coast for so long, I used to live further inland in Alabama, but now that I've lived this close to the coast for this long, it's like you know, it's like you always want what's on the other side of the fence. And now it's like I'm always longing to go to the mountains and a cabin somewhere in the middle of a forest, like you said, and where, you know, where you can see the change of seasons. And you know, it's like the more I go to the beach, the more I realize it's not what it was made out to be when, like, as a kid or a teenager. It's like it's really not a comfortable thing to do, you know, sitting in the hot sun, getting sand on you, getting, you know, with the sunscreen, and, you know, and then it gets stuck to the sunscreen, and it's just not really, It's a fun thing to do once a year, especially if you pick a really nice beach to go to. But, you know, to go and do it every weekend or something, it's just, I agree. It's really not something that our people are really, made to do. I don't know.
I like it for a week or two out of the year. Now, that's just me. I know people say they dream of living on the beach. They want to retire. They want to live their whole life there on the beach. But there, you know, and I agree with you, too, that we are, you know, we have an affinity for the sea. Our people do. I mean, that's in our explorer DNA. But, of course, that coastline in Scotland's a lot different than that coastline in the panhandle down there with Florida and Mississippi and Alabama. But you said you have had some encounters with some arrogant non-Southern liberal whites on this topic. What does that mean?
Oh, it's funny. You've already touched on some of it by bringing up the beautiful beaches. But all on social media, I have friends all over the country. I love, you know, I love people from all around the country. There's good and bad from everywhere. There is a tendency for, and I do apologize to people in the audience who are from up north, because I know in the past on this show, I got a little carried away with my Southern pride. I love our people from everywhere who are on our side. And I know there's good and bad on both sides or both parts of the country, but there is a tendency for people who live further away from minorities to be, you know, less in tune with the race issues, and our people, you know, are always around minorities. So it just happens to be that way. But so there are some of the more liberal, you know, the more liberal connections I have on social media, you know, they do tend to mostly be from up north. And I love, you know, during fall, I love to put up pictures, like nice fall scenery pictures on social media. And it just makes me feel good. And I like to share what makes me feel good. And I'll have, like, one of my arrogant friends that's not from Alabama. They'll say, well, how do you even know what that's like? And I'll be like, well, that's why I long for it. And you know, in North Alabama, we actually do have some areas where you do get fall foliage, like in the pretty northern hills up there around Huntsville. It is really pretty up there. But then, you know, in the southern part of the state, as you mentioned, we do have our beautiful beaches and everything. And it's funny, those same people on social media, like even when I post a beautiful beach photo in Alabama, they'll say, that's not Alabama, it's South Florida. And I'm like, no, it's Alabama. And it's like, I think there's a lot of people who have this perception that Alabama is nothing but mud or something. I don't know. But we do have our own type of beauty here. But I definitely do prefer the more, I mean, at least at this part of my life. I mean, there was a time in my life where it was a little different, but at this stage of my life, I prefer a nice cozy cottage somewhere in the mountains with fall leaves and a warm drink or something like that.
I hear you. But, I'm with you. Yeah, I think as we age, maybe preferences do change, but at the end of the day, I just think this is who we are. I mean, we evolved in that climate. I mean, you know, I was talking about this last week too. I was thinking the weather had just turned a little bit before our last show. So maybe 10 days ago it turned, and I was walking with my daughter. It was about in the 50s. We were walking around the neighborhood, and I was just telling her how wonderful this felt, you know, because that's where we came from. And it was because of that climate that we became who we are, not having the long growing seasons, having to be clever and inventive and industrious and finding a way to survive these harsh winters that we had in northwestern Europe. And it caused our brains to develop more than some of the people in other climates where food was always readily available, you know, and game was available, and it was always fruit, and it was falling from the trees into their laps. So, you know, so much of the climate made Europeans what they are. And so I think that's why we have an affinity for this particular type of weather. Am I way off base here?
Oh, I agree fully. I definitely agree with you. It'll be interesting to see. Well, I guess that's a whole other topic to go into, but it'll be, you know, like I'm talking about hundreds of years down the line. And of course, I'm an optimist for our future and everything. I'm not a pessimist, but I do think we have a future. It'll be interesting to see if our people over time, as much as I love my beloved Alabama, and I'm sure as much as the whites who are down in the Caribbean love their areas, you know, it'll be interesting to see if over time, you know, white people start moving further north back to where we'd rather be. Like, there's parts of
that is an interesting question, because I have a conflict with that. Is that, you know, like you, of course, that's one of the things I'm known for, and the show is known for, is, you know, Southern pride and heritage, and this is where our people came from once we came to settle and colonize America, and we came from Scotland and Europe and Wales and Ireland, and we came down here, England, and we settled this part of the country that was a totally different climate than that from which we came. But of course, this is ours now, or has been ours, and I have that Southern pride, and I love everything about Southern culture. I love the South. I would die for the South. I was born in the South. I want to be buried in the South, but boy, I never did take to the weather. Yeah, so it is interesting when it comes to everything is great about the South except for the climate. It just doesn't match with who we are and what our people are and what our historical where we came from throughout history is. But we got to take a break. I was talking with Courtney earlier today, and she said, you know, 15 minutes, maybe that's too much. I said, no, we can do easy 30. We could do more than that. We haven't even scratched the surface of the things I wanted to talk to her about. Well, but we will talk to her about a little bit more in detail about why she loves this time of year and how Southern Baptists are taking the fun out of Halloween. We'll be right back.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash from my laboratory.
Well, there is a Halloween standard if there ever was one. And welcome back to the final segment of what has been a fantastic show with Simon Roche, Keith Alexander, Sam Bushman, Jack Ryan. And by the way, Courtney, Jack, our weekly correspondent, told me to tell you hello when he heard you were coming on. So you have fans even amongst the staff here, as you well know. And we, with regard to Courtney, she's been one of those ones that has just always been there. She has been a fan and a friend and a listener of this program for as long as I can remember. In fact, I don't even remember when I first met Courtney. She has just always been there. And she's back tonight to talk about Halloween and what makes this season of the year so special. And let's first go back to the history of Halloween itself. A quick clip. We'll let Courtney listen to it and then respond. Here's the history of Halloween and how it pertains to our people.
From communion with the dead to pumpkins and pranks, Halloween is a patchwork holiday stitched together with cultural, religious, and occult traditions that span centuries. It all began with the Celts, a people whose culture had spread across Europe more than 2,000 years ago. October 31st was the day they celebrated the end of the harvest season in a festival called Samhain. That night also marked the Celtic New Year and was considered a time between years, a magical time when the ghost of the dead walked the earth.
It was the time when the veil between death and life was supposed to be at its thinnest.
On Samhain, the villagers gathered and lit huge bonfires to drive the dead back to the spirit world and keep them away from the living. But as the Catholic Church's influence grew in Europe, it frowned on the pagan rituals like Samhain. In the 7th century, the Vatican began to merge it with a church-sanctioned holiday. So November 1st was designated All Saints' Day to honor martyrs and the deceased faithful.
Both of these holidays had to do with the afterlife and about survival after death. It was a calculated move on the part of the church to bring more people into the fold.
All Saints' Day was known then as Hallowmas. Hallow means holy or saintly, so the translation is roughly Mass of the Saints. The night before, October 31st, was All Hallows' Eve, which gradually morphed into Halloween. The holiday came to America with the wave of Irish immigrants during the potato famine of the 1840s. They brought several of their holiday customs with them, including bobbing for apples and playing tricks on neighbors, like removing gates from the front of houses. The young pranksters wore masks so they wouldn't be recognized. But over the years, the tradition of harmless tricks grew into outright vandalism.
Back in the 1930s, it really became a dangerous holiday. I mean, there was such hooliganism and vandalism. Trick-or-treating was originally a extortion deal. Give us candy or we'll trash your house.
Storekeepers and neighbors began giving treats or bribes to stop the tricks, and children were encouraged to travel door-to-door for treats as an alternative to troublemaking. By the late 30s, trick-or-treat became the holiday greeting.
Okay, so we're here back with Courtney from Alabama talking about Halloween, and I think just listening to that clip, it reminds us that this goes back, as we just were reminded, all the way to the Celts. This is something that is very European in tradition, and whether those traditions are handed down orally or through genetic predisposition, I think some of it just comes with our DNA package. This is a European time of year, and that's what we're here to talk about. So, continue on, Courtney, with how much and why you love this time of year and how the church now is taking the fun not out of just Halloween, but of Christmas as well.
And that was an interesting clip, by the way. I enjoyed that. Ever since I can remember, we celebrated Halloween in my house growing up, you know, and you know, it was all about jack-o'-lanterns and, you know, friendly looking ghosts, you know, like little decorations like that around the house that my mom would put out, little Frankensteins. And it's all harmless things. It's fun. It doesn't mean you're worshiping those things. It's just it's you're recognizing the history of it, and it's fun. It's almost like you're poking fun at those things. You're not worshiping them in place of Christ or anything. It's just you're kind of poking fun at it, and it's a lot of fun, and it's part of our history. And I've never, you know, and as an adult, I still have fun with that stuff. And I let my kids enjoy it. I've never been into the blood and guts Halloween or like the demonic stuff or anything. I agree that stuff gets a little too, you know, goes too far, but you know, jack-o'-lanterns, witches, black cats, just appreciating it as the mythical characters and what they come from. I mean, I enjoy that stuff. I find it harmless. And a lot of it's a trend now for many, many Southern Baptists, to these days to, you know, think that we can't celebrate Halloween, like we're somehow anti-Christian if we celebrate Halloween. And I think, you know, and I'm not talking about anybody in the audience who might be dealing this, you know, because I know it's all good people that are listening to your show, but I'm talking about the ones who, the anti-white evangelical types who want to turn Christianity into a strictly Semitic worship, you know, instead of worshiping our European, you know, instead of enjoying the European part of our Christian history. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying it because it's who we are. There's nothing wrong with celebrating Christianity, you know, using European traditions instead of just going to this boring, bland, you know, strictly Semitic, you know, based where you get rid of all, you know, all these celebrations that came from Europe. And when it comes to Christmas, you know, a lot of these same people are now taking Santa Claus out of their home. And if that's what somebody wants to do, especially if it's a good person who listens to your show, I'm not judging them, but I'm talking about the anti-white ones who just don't seem to have a life. They're serious about everything. They're judgmental. They're miserable people. I don't doubt that they're true Christians, but it's the judgmental part that comes from them. I guess, you know, they can do what they want to do. They can celebrate how they wish, but I don't get it. I guess I just don't get it. I find it a very harmless celebration. You know, it's a very harmless, very old, you know, celebration. And again, it doesn't mean you're. It's a very shallow way to look at things. If you think that by celebrating that means you're worshiping witches.
No, I mean, look, we're Christians. This is a Christian program, but we can certainly give a tip of the hat to our ancient European pre-Christian ancestors, and in a fun, family-friendly, non-religious way, kind of incorporate some of these things that the church has always done. I mean, the church took pagan, you know, elements of paganism and put it under the umbrella of Christianity. But with regard to the church, it's interesting. I mean, they can take a hard stand against soft targets. They can target, you know, how evil and sinful it is if you have a beer, or how evil and sinful it is if you celebrate Halloween. But when it comes to doing what the church is supposed to do, which is to protect and advance Christianity, they completely lay down and roll over. You don't hear hardly any churches anymore, even Southern Baptists, even these fundamentalist conservative, or, you know, for lack of a better word, churches. They don't really get out hard and heavy and say anything against homosexuality anymore. They certainly don't say anything with regards to securing the border or doing anything that they would need to do to protect their flock. They just don't do it. But when it comes time to waving their hands and talking tough about things that they're absolutely never going to have any hope of changing, well, then they can do that because, of course, they know that that's never going to go anywhere. And it's not going to cause them any concerns with their societal overseers. You know, they can rail about alcoholism or Halloween all they want. That's not really hitting the enemy where it hurts.
Right. That was a good way to put it. I agree. Now, I have noticed at least the Southern Baptist churches I go to, I do give them props for, I do appreciate the fact that the ones I've been to at least are still pretty good about gender roles as well and sure, homosexuality, you know, at least the ones I've gone to. But when it comes to the race issue, I mean, forget that. I mean, It's so ridiculous.
No. I think of course there is a difference between church and church and the convention itself with regard to the Southern Baptist, and you know my history with the Southern Baptist and all of that. But they are still fairly decent on some of these issues. They're just not going to go out into the street and actually flex any sort of muscle to overturn homosexual marriage or anything like that. But anyway, we're out of time. What a great 30 minutes. Man, it went by far too quick. The whole show did tonight. Courtney, thank you. Happy Halloween. We hope to talk to you again soon. And for everyone else, we'll see you next week when TPC returns. I'm James Edwards for the entire crew. God bless you. Have a good night. Go to a corn maze. Pick a pumpkin. Do something with your kids. Enjoy this time of year. We'll talk to you next week.